As part of the Martin Luther King Remembrance broadcasts, a speech of his given to what seemed a hall of privileged Brits, a speech that had for some reason disappeared, was found and aired. His voice in that charged house made me think of that line of Emily's, positive as sound. He was assertive to a fault. His words broke crystalline over that crowd, as if he cared not whether they were cut. A very, very powerful man. But with one line I took issue. He said this, or close to it: if there isn't a cause a man is willing to die for, he's not fit to live. I think there's a different way to look at it. If there isn't a cause a man or woman is willing to live for, then he or she will languish in soul death or soul abandonment. We move so fast under class to stay one step ahead of that Frankenstein-made monster, that created beast, necessity, taking ever more bites out of our ass. We move so fast to prove we're good enough to live. Or, as Orwell said, we're so busy sucking what we're told is jam, we fail to notice we're technically dead. When I couldn't stick to a job, I mourned. I feared the worst. I comforted myself with escapist fillers of the time, my life adrift from its mooring that the ancestors had made for it. And then, after, I'd put on those clothes that never fit and went back out into the wilderness of mindless competition. First one job interview, then the next. Once, going home from one such, climbing into a seat on the bus, I happened to see my face looking back at me from an overhead mirror at the front. And in shock, I saw a skull, a hollowed-eyed mask of death. It shook me. Yes, it did. Because instinctively I saw. The glimpse into the mirror showed me true. I wasn't living. Whatever you may call the practice I call hoop jumping, it's not living. Though I saw it as a sign, the seeing stood for act for some time after that. Till I could find a path. I groped. I let my body find its way. One step led to the next and to the next, until I found the further insight that, uncoupled from our fellows of the life, we are nothing but a seeking and a groping back to it, to them. I found my meaning in the words, we are here to synthesize and advance our ancestors' gifts, who longed for human freedom and to be part of its realization. This, I believe, is the true way to honor their legacy. And in the case of King, to honor him would mean carrying forward his reasoning to the place it was seeking, the vantage high that sees the globe. When folks marvel, all amazed at his alleged prescience, as they did this week and they do every year on his birthday, that his words of 50 years ago are still relevant. And I suppose then the continued relevance of Du Bois's and Kropotkin's of 100 years ago, they'd find even more impressive. But why stop there? Why not go back to Antiphon in ancient Greece, an early advocate for our freedom? Or perhaps we should be amazed at how prescient Xenophon could be in anticipating Bentham. This is not inspiring. This is hope on the verge of expiring. She should not have to tread water for so long. The continued relevance means we have not synthesized and advanced our ancestors' gifts if we had. I wouldn't have heard a woman say, representing Black Lives Matter locally, on a progressive radio talk show, that they have a strategic plan, and then proceed to tell a caller, per Michael Moore's advice some years ago, a caller who was appalled at die-ins, say to her, if you don't like die-ins, then lick stamps, spread the word, just get active, unquote. And there goes strategic out the window, unnoticed and unmissed, i.e., whatever she had, it wasn't strategic.